You are listening to a Ruth Millington Extreme Holidays podcast. Extreme stories from extraordinary destinations as told by intrepid world travellers. Presented by travel writer and adventure junkie Ruth Millington, survivor and heroine of the 2003 BAM earthquake in Iran.
Hey everyone, thanks for tuning in. This is the Extreme Holidays podcast, a show for those who love to travel and which shares the stories of some extraordinary people who have travelled to amazing places or experienced extreme, often life-changing events whilst on their holidays and travels. I'm Hannah Scott, your guest host, and in this episode, we're turning the tables and I'm interviewing the one and only Ruth Millington, woohoo, the creator and host of the Extreme Holidays podcast who recently returned from a five-week trip to Colombia. Ruth is, as you probably know, an award-winning writer who, during the last 30 years, has travelled to over 100 countries. Colombia was always on her bucket list to travel to, and this autumn she finally made it. So she's here today to discuss what inspired her to go, the route that she took, and the tips and advice on travelling through the country. So, without further ado, let's travel the world together. Welcome to the show, Ruth.
Thanks so much, Hannah.
You've been in Colombia. It has a reputation for being dangerous. I'm really curious to know, you know, why did you go?
Well, funny enough, I was there in 1995. I've been doing the Inca Trail in Peru. And on the way back, my airline, it's Avianca, was flying via, first of all, Ecuador and then onto Colombia, but it got stuck. So I was basically stuck in Colombia, taken to a hotel in Bogota and was put there for about 12 hours. It was always one of those places. I'd been in the country, but not actually seen the place other than a hotel room. So I was always kind of excited to go back. And in terms of its safety, yeah, back in 1995, it was dangerous. I wasn't allowed at the hotel. There was armed guards there. Since about 1948, there's been really big problems in Colombia. And that's escalated. It originally was a political problem with the government, and it escalated during the 80s when the big cartels, the drug cartels, came about. Since I was there in 1995, it escalated even further until about 2005 when there were major killings. There were about 180 people a day being killed in Bogota. But eventually, in the last 5-6 years, there's been a big change around. There's been a peace agreement, or it was just about agreed upon with the Colombian government. So again, it's a much safer place to be in. And as well as in terms of a country itself, it's immensely diverse, both in terms of its topography and also its culture. There's 3 million indigenous people live there. There's the Spanish influence, also the Creole influence. And it's the most eco-diverse country in the world after Brazil. And now, because of the peace agreement, it's also considered one of the safest places to travel in South America, provided you stick to the routes which are opened up.
That's really interesting. I mean, I guess, you've done all your reading and research to know all of those things before traveling. But I mean, how did your friends and family react to you going?
My mum and dad just accept that I travel. They know that I'm well read. They know that I research a lot before I go to a country because they're very well read as well. And they always read the news a lot and listen to the news. Some friends thought I was slightly mad. I know other family members who came up to me who were really concerned about my safety and told me, you know, be careful. And it's one of those situations that no matter how much you tell people and no matter how much people understand how much you've travelled in the past, they often try to project their fears onto you. And I must admit, having not travelled that much in the last 2 to 3 years because of the pandemic, it was quite easy to take on board their fear. But then I just thought, you know, I'm going back to how I was and I'm getting on that plane and just going.
Yeah, you've got to trust yourself, haven't you? And did you have to avoid any parts as you were travelling through the country?
The main central areas, so it's essentially where the two main mountain ranges run up through the central part of the country, is safe. It's very opened up now. And when I talk about safe, in Latin America in particular, you have to be careful at night in the big cities. And provided you do that, it's generally very safe. further south. So it's the section essentially between just south of Bogota down to the Amazon. There is still some problems, and they do recommend that you don't go down there.
Can you tell me a bit more about the route that you took?
I ended up flying into Bogota and I headed south. Funny enough is I had COVID earlier on in the year and I was feeling a bit tired. So I decided to sort of do the more bigger journeys later on. So from Bogota, I headed down to the Tatacoa Desert. And then I went down to San Antonio, which is an area where there's huge archaeological ruins. And then I headed round, started going literally round the corner and heading up north at the country. And Colombia is vast. It's about the length of Europe. So it's a very, very big country. And from there, I headed north and I was in places like Popayán until I eventually flew from a place called Salento up in the mountains up to the north to a place, a really beautiful city called Cartagena, which is on the Caribbean coast. And then I followed the Caribbean coast along to Santa Marta. There's a big Tayrona National Park there, which is, again, beautiful to see. Very, very rough seas, typical Caribbean seas there. Not safe to go on the beaches, as in swimming. But again, you can see some amazing mountain ranges. And then at the end of the trip, I flew back to Bogota and I flew down to the Amazon for about a week down there.
Why did you choose that route, Ruth? I mean, was it something that you'd pre-planned or did you kind of make it up a little bit as you went along?
It was a bit of made up along the way, but as well as I wanted to experience a little bit of something. So I wanted to experience the desert. I wanted to go under the stars at night and stargaze and explore this small desert area. I wanted to be in the extreme of temperatures. But I also love seeing ruins. So I had that San Antonio. I was able to see archaeological sites and walk up into the hills. And I also wanted to see, I wanted a bit of sun up in the Caribbean, everywhere else. Although it was, you know, some places were moderately warm, others quite cold. You know, I wanted to see some of the big cities, the colonial impact there and the architecture. And ultimately, I wanted to get down to Amazon because I have been there before and I just love that place. And I had never been on the Colombian side of the Amazon before, which is very different to other parts.
Is that one of the highlights of the trip?
Yeah. Also, because of the horrendous heat as well. I mean, you're going up in the north is very, very hot, but at least you have the sea breeze coming in. You can go into your hotel room, etc. When you're in the Amazon, you are staying literally in wooden, you know, lodges on stilts. It's very basic. There's every creepy crawly imaginable. So, you know, you'll be up in a morning, you know, doing a jungle walk, or you may be on sunrise on the actual Amazon River itself, spotting pink dolphins. You may go out in the evening, you know, looking for caimans. I went piranha fishing. There's a huge amount that you can actually do. It's not like the big game reserves in Africa. You're not going to be seeing a leopard or a lion or a panther or whatever. You may see a sloth, you know, up in the trees. I did see a sloth's bottom, or at least I was told by guide it was. But also it's why I wanted to go in the Amazon, because there's a lot of indigenous tribes down there. And both my guides, because it was like a two-center trip I did, one which was in just into the Peru side, another which was further north of a city called Leticia, which I originally flown into. And that was really into the heart of the jungle, that one. Different guys from indigenous groups who had a very different perspective on the Amazon itself as well.
And did you eat the piranha?
No, it is an eco-friendly one. So when you take the piranha out, you then put it back in the river. And those things, you don't want to get bitten by one of those things, because they are quite little slithery buggers with big teeth.
Thinking about kind of global warming and everything, did you see any impacts along the trip?
It's difficult to say whether it is actual global warming, but what I would say is, for example, the Amazon, when I was there, it reached a heat of over 42 degrees, which they'd never experienced before in that part of the Amazon. I had to dress in Wellington boots or rubber boots. I had trousers on. I had a long shirt on and a hat. So you can imagine the extreme heat and how much I was sweating then. Mm-hmm. And also when I was in the Tatacoa Desert one morning, we had a tremendous amount of rain and they rarely get any rain. And I turn up and suddenly there's this downpour for 2 hours. I was supposed to be going on a little trip with this guide to actually walk through the little canyons, which are in the desert. Ironically, though, a couple of weeks later, there had been so much rain, they discovered some fossils which they hadn't come across before. Again, whether that was due to global warming, I don't know. But I think what we are seeing are sometimes changes in the weather, which are so extreme, it's difficult not to connect it.
One of the questions I wanted to ask you actually kind of fits in quite well here. I was curious to know your view on the impact of travel and tourism on the environment.
Yeah, in Colombia, for example, you're now getting a lot of cheap airlines flying around, and there is a massive growing middle class population. Everyone middle class wants their finca out in the countryside. And because it's such a big country, so people are hopping on these planes, they're almost like buses. So that's not good for the environment. I try to stick with local transport, fly as few times as I could. It's not an ideal situation at all. And it is one thing that I'm always wary about when I'm traveling. I mean, there are ways to try and offset it, but it's not a perfect situation. And I'm just hoping, you know, I've got a friend who's a scientist working on this kind of technology, and there is stuff coming up, but whether that's going to come out quickly enough, I don't know. I am conflicted with that, and it does concern me.
Yeah, yeah. Well, what's the infrastructure in Colombia like?
It's pretty good, actually. You've got great highways, running water in most places, you know, cafes, you've got restaurants, you've got electricity, gas, you know, you name it, you have it these days. It always has been a relatively developed country in that sense, although when the cartels were really big, it was very difficult for people to get around the country because the cartels, drug cartels, would create roadblocks and basically kidnap people or take them for ransom money. Now that's all gone. It's really opened up a lot. One thing that isn't that developed is the tourism trade. And that's purely because of the peace agreement only coming in recently and due to the pandemic. So, for example, Colombia has a huge amount of national parks, two, you know, major mountain ranges. So the trekking opportunities are amazing. But it was difficult actually finding trekking agencies just to take me, for example, on my own. But saying that, I wasn't too worried because it is such a vast country. If I'd spent a week trekking, there's lots of places I wouldn't have been able to get to.
And how did you find accommodation then in the places that you went to?
Very easy. Now, I come from a generation of travellers when you turned up with your backpack and you hoped the hotel in your Lonely Planet was available. But, you know, these days you've got booking.com and Airbnb, which is very prolific in Colombia. So I use those all the time. The only thing I would say is that, you know, at the weekends, all the Colombians are traveling. So you get to a place which during the week can be quite quiet, Salento being an example. And suddenly at the weekends, you know, it seemed like the whole of Colombia descended on the place. So, but at least it gives you that facility to, you know, be able to book. And it was clean, basic, quite expensive though. You know, I was paying probably about £30 a night for something, which, yeah, compared to my, you know, my usual backpacking days, it is it can get quite expensive on a month's trip.
Yeah. Did you expect that?
No. Again, I'm one of these travellers. I'm like, oh, I'm just going to go to this country, which I think always worries people tremendously. And I kind of have a vague idea what I want to do. But often the accommodation I don't check out because I just think, you know, there'll be something cheap there. Most places there are. And so when I got down there, I was like, oh, this is slightly more expensive than anticipated. But, you know, it kind of runs around in circles because buses aren't that expensive to travel on. Food's relatively cheap. So you kind of, you know, weigh up. You know, I never allow that to stop me from traveling. But, you know, you just have to kind of budget a little bit whilst you're on the road.
I mean, you mentioned buses. I mean, how did you actually get around?
Buses, the majority of the time, they're fast, they're cheap. and they're on time, which compared to many countries in South America is very rare. Yes, which, you know, in South America, there's this very kind of, you know, mañana, mañana mentality, you know, tomorrow, tomorrow kind of thing. But Colombia's not. And if the bus says it's going to leave at 11, it leaves at 11. And, you know, there was one time I got to the bus station, I was a minute late and the bus had already gone. I mean, luckily there was another one in half an hour because there are big, you know, there's a lot of coaches and so forth running on these. But there are some big distances that you can go at. And you do have drivers who drive pretty fast. There was a place I was coming out of and I was going up a mountain, and he was like a Formula One driver. You know, there was like a 1,000 meter drop. And I'm thinking, whoa. And it was raining heavily. And I was looking down thinking, you know, this is really not a good situation. But I think it's like anything when you travel and you're experienced. I've been in so many buses where they drive crazily. You just shut your eyes and think, you know, if it's going to happen, it's going to happen. I can't do anything about it.
I can remember my mum always joking about mañana, mañana when we used to go on holiday to Spain. So was that something that you experienced a lot of in Colombia as well? Or
no, surprisingly not. And again, this has really surprised me. I think because they've been held back so much as a country because of the huge drug issues and political issues, they're really wanting to advance very quickly as a country. They want to shed that we're the world's biggest producer of cocaine, for example. They want to shed that image. A lot of the locals are really horrified by it and very embarrassed if you try to talk to them about it. So they want to really get over that image. They want to get with the modern times. They want to develop. They want to increase tourism. So they don't want to have any kind of like bad reputations. Some other countries in South America haven't got the same or haven't had the same drug issues. So they can sort of run the mañana, mañana slightly mentality. But Colombia is a very, very different kettle of fish as such.
And how did you get along with the lingo? I mean, can you speak Spanish at all, or how did you cope?
It's probably pidgin Spanish. Back in my late 20s, I did learn some Spanish. And then when I very first sort of started traveling big time, I was in South America for about 4 months, and I could sort of speak basic Spanish after that. But I hadn't really spoken it properly for about 20 years. So when I went down there, it was one thing that actually had put me off going to Colombia, because I got slightly nervous about it. And this was in kind of a conjunction. The fact is, you know, I hadn't traveled as much during the pandemic and so forth. But what was really amazing about the country is people really loved me for trying to make that effort. Hardly anyone speaks English in Colombia. So you are forced to speak the language. And they're very, very accommodating. They're very patient with you. And they seem to grasp what you're saying. I'm not saying I could have a talk about politics, but I could talk. I ended up being able to speak to people about their families and so forth, and just general conversations about where I was traveling to and what I did. Even though, you know, to a normal, you know, Spanish speaker, say here in Spain, would probably think I sound like an idiot. I don't know. But so that was really helpful. Saying that, though, there were lots of regional accents. The easiest I found was kind of around San Agustin, which is sort of further south of Bogota. And I had a guide. Well, he wasn't really a guide. He just drove me around in a Jeep to take me to these different places. And he spoke really, really slowly, so I could understand him. And he said to me, what brilliant Spanish I spoke, which I thought was very funny and very charming at the same time. But then when I got to the Caribbean coast on the north of Colombia, it was like I was just in another country. Couldn't understand a word. I couldn't even understand when they asked me what country I was coming from. I couldn't even hear them say the word country. Because usually when you don't speak a language very well, you listen out for the key words. And I couldn't even hear that word. I subsequently spoke to a number of Colombians and also a friend of mine who lives in Bogota. And they were saying, yeah, we get there. We can't even understand the Spanish. One friend said, yeah, every other word is a swear word. So, you know, you're going to have difficulty understanding that.
Ruth Millington's Extreme Holidays Podcasts. Life-changing stories and adventures from the world's intrepid holidaymakers and travellers.
What about the food? Did you have a favourite meal?
I really liked the trout.
Trout?
There's an area... Trout, yeah, trouts. Okay. So they trout farms. And trout in this country, in the UK, is, you know, a lot of it's wild and it's quite an intense earthly taste to it. But they do trout fisheries out there, and especially around the Salento region, and I was sort of doing some hiking around the area. I had a trout every night. And up in the north, I love the real Creole-influenced food as well. And in the Amazon, it was fantastic as well. Every day, and sometimes for breakfast as well, we had fish. Because the fish in the Amazon can grow up to 2 meters. So they're these huge monstrosities, which you don't realise are underneath your boat. Because, you know, the Amazon itself is just packed with fish. Places around Bogota, but I mean, Bogota is at high altitude. The food generally has, there's kind of more fried food there, I found, and not necessarily quite to my taste. And I struggle getting like the really, you know, lots of vegetables and stuff as much there. But again, it's just nice going to a country where you can sort of pick and choose as you go around and taste all the different local specialities.
It's making me feel hungry just thinking about it all. Did you run into any problems, Ruth, along your travels?
No, in general, everyone was incredibly helpful. Bus drivers in particular were brilliant, which, you know, often when you're traveling, bus drivers or taxi drivers can be a bit of a pain in the butt. But they were fantastic. I had one taxi driver who in Bogota who said to me, "Everywhere is dangerous. I'm taking you now to the bus station. It is dangerous. You be careful." And he was very sweet. And it wasn't dangerous, but for him, me as a single woman, he just had this vision I was going to basically die. However, saying that, I did come across a situation when I was in Salento. I was staying in a little hotel. There's a main square up on the hill, and I was literally staying 2 minutes walk down the hill, and it was twilight, and I was going around the corner, and this young man came up to me, and he said something to me in Spanish, and he looked a bit kind of dodgy. He was probably in his 20s, but he didn't look quite right, and I think you have sort of a sixth sense. And he kept saying something to me, and I couldn't understand what he's saying. And then he put his hand into his trousers, and I thought, oh my God. Well, yeah. Well, my immediate reaction was, he's either going to sexually assault me or he's going to bring out a knife. And that was, and for that moment, my heart nearly stopped. And I just thought, I need to run. But most of a lot of Colombia is at high altitude, and trying to run away from him would have been quite difficult. So I kind of like this. And he actually brought drugs out in the end. But for that moment, I was really quite fearful.
Yeah, yeah. It's because you look so dodgy though, isn't it, Ruth? I mean...
Yes. he bought out these drugs, and I realised what he was asking. So I turned around and said to him in Spanish that I was old enough to be his mother. And then he ran away. So sometimes humour in those circumstances does well. But I would say is trust your instincts. Always be streetwise. At night in Colombia, a lot of the cities are not safe to walk around. It's not that they will necessarily kill you, but it's more opportunity theft.
Yeah, yeah.
So you have to be careful. And the other situation was when I was in the Amazon. I left my passport with the agency because you have to book through an agency to go into the Amazon. I was going between Peru, Colombia, and Brazil. They kind of connect the countries at this point in Leticia. But you don't normally have to show your passport. So I thought, well, rather than losing it in the Amazon, just leave it in the agency. But as I came back after the initial trip, we're heading back into Leticia, and I'm on this riverboat. And basically the drug squad teams show up, and you know they've all got their big guns and pointing it at me, saying passport, and I'm like, oh, got no passport. And they were like looking at me going, oh, she's mad. And I was like, got no passport. And I couldn't even get connection on my phone because you're in the Amazon. Got no connection on my phone to show, you know, the photograph of my passport. And then also I couldn't even show my airline ticket. So I was just very polite to them in the end. And they realized that I probably was just a bit of a stupid tourist. So I was all right. But I was like, so again, if you are traveling, always have a copy of your passport on you.
Yeah, good advice. I mean, do any of these experiences put you off kind of traveling to these places if you feel unsafe along the way?
No, not really. I mean, as a writer, they provide a lot of stories for me.
absolutely.
And there's an old adage that it's not the final destination, it's getting there. The journey to get to A to B is often more interesting than the actual B itself. And I think all that you do is it's just a reminder to trust your gut. And it just is great life experience.
Absolutely, yeah. And I think a good sort of way to keep your humour
up to
speed, isn't it? I mean, when you're abroad, you just remember how to laugh at things and at yourself and at the things going on around you.
It is. I mean, it puts life into perspective. You know, yeah. I mean, you come back. I come back to England and people may be complaining because there's not a bus running. But when you see other countries and you see what's happening there and you see the struggles they've had, I'm always grateful for when I come back to England for what I have. And so it's very grounding in many ways.
So were there any low points on the trip?
Yeah. And I suppose this goes back to the issue about being green. Just outside Cartagena, I went on a trip to the Rosario Islands, thinking you're basically going to see these beautiful mini archipelago of islands and so forth. And it turned out to be like some trip in Cancun, mid-spring break kind of thing. They were blasting up music on this big speedboat all day. Area where we snorkeled had been hugely damaged, the reef there. Mm. They at one point took us to a place and the guide, who was about 16, who was dressed very trendily with white glasses, said, "This will be the best experience of your life, Ruth, ever." And I ended up standing in the ocean by a wooden table floating and drinking beer with music blasting out in this really sort of beautiful area. And I was just absolutely appalled by it. As a country, which is the second most eco-diverse country after Brazil, that's not the way tourism should be going.
So you travelled on your own. Would you recommend that to other people?
Yes, completely. I find it one of the best experiences. As a writer, for want of a better word, I'm a bit of a people watcher. I think when you travel on your own, you have to know how to get back to your hotel at night. You have to know the route you're taking. But at the same time, you interact with a lot of people because they're always very fascinated that you are traveling on your own. That's one of the things I love about it. You know, provided you don't get into the drug scene, for example, in Colombia or anything like that, a really wonderful place to travel around. And I found people extremely helpful.
So would you go back?
Yes, definitely. There was so much that I wanted to explore. And I was going to ask you, Hannah, if you'd like to come some time with me.
Oh, I would absolutely love to.
There's so many trekking regions I want to go into. Mm-hmm. I felt like I needed probably about 6 months there to really experience it properly. 5 weeks was simply not enough.
Yeah. Okay, well, that's you're on. And I mean, obviously there's a lot to cover. So I think you're doing another podcast about Colombia. Can you tell us a little bit more about what's going to be in that?
Yeah, I did a graffiti tour of Bogota when I first arrived in Colombia. Some areas of the city are completely covered in graffiti. Many are political statements. Some are, in a sense, done as shrines to people that were killed during the political problems they've had. I'm actually going to be talking a lot about that because it's so fascinating, the history of Bogota and the political history which has run. You know, this has been going on for several centuries, but it really kind of blew up from about 1948. And in that podcast, I'll be looking about the struggles that people have endured.
Interesting. Well, looking forward to hearing that. How did it feel then to sort of put on your backpack and head off for your 5 week trip after everything we've been through in the COVID pandemic?
It was fantastic, but I forgot some basic stuff, like, as I said before, taking a copy of my passport. And I did feel nervous. It was kind of like, although I've done some trips during the pandemic, it's been to Europe, which I'm familiar with, and I hadn't really done any, you know, long haul flights prior to going to Ethiopia just before the pandemic struck. So I did have that sort of nervous anticipation, and as I said before, not speaking the language. I also overpacked, but just took too much stuff. And then one of the straps broke on the backpack. And I think going forward, I will now be taking a little trolley bag because they're just easier and you don't kind of rip your shoulders out of their sockets as well.
So, Ruth, where is your next trip going to be to?
Well, I've just come back from Cyprus, which was a very fascinating trip because I went into North Cyprus, and which I don't know if listeners know, but the country is really divided. It was fascinating seeing the political differences and literally walking across the green line where the UN is basically operating to stop any conflicts between the two. And in terms of future trips, I've been wanting to go for a long time to the archipelago east of Java. So I want to go to places like Lombok. And I want to go to Venezuela. It's a little bit difficult at the moment because of the troubles that they're having there. But again, there's lots of places in South America either I want to go back to or experience more of. And Nicaragua to see the volcanoes.
So yeah, Ruth, thank you so much for coming on the show. It's been an absolute pleasure to turn the tables and to listen to some of your travellers' tales. Colombia sounds absolutely amazing, and I really can't wait to have an opportunity to go there, and it would be amazing to go together. That would be really good fun. So to all those listening in, this is the end of today's show. So thank you so much for joining me, Hannah, on the Extreme Holidays podcast. It's been great fun being today's host, but Ruth will be returning next week, so phew, I don't have to do it again. Don't forget to rate, review and subscribe on your podcast app. It means you will be the first to hear when new episodes come out, and it will help others to find this podcast. For more tips and tricks on travelling and who will be joining Ruth in the next episode, follow her on Instagram at Ruth Millington Author or on Twitter at Ruth Millington One. You can also sign up to her newsletter at www.ruthmillingtonauthor.com, details of which are all in the show notes. To hear future episodes as soon as they're released, don't forget to hit the follow or subscribe button. And thanks for listening.
Have been listening to a Ruth Millington Extreme Holidays podcast. Extreme stories from extraordinary destinations as told by intrepid world travelers. Find out more at ruthmillingtonauthor.com or search online using Ruth Millington Extreme Holidays.
Ruth Millington's Extreme Holidays podcast is sponsored by HelpYouFind.me, a secure yet simple way to share private data for use in emergency situations that is end-to-end, encrypted and accessible only by you and the people you choose to share it with. Perfect for the extreme traveller. Find out more at HelpYouFind.me/extreme10 and get a 10% discount when you sign up. Details are also in the show notes.